The following podcast may contain some strong language and adult themes. If you've got young children around, maybe save it until they've gone to bed. If you really don't like bad words, this pod probably isn't for you.
Welcome to the Making Up the Numbers podcast. The Making Up the Numbers podcast is sponsored by Hope Technology, JTEC Suspension, Revolution Bike Park, Ride Southern Spain, Schwal, and the world's finest independent mountain bike magazine, Single Track. Previously on the Making Up the Numbers podcast.
It was crazy because I just got a hospital. I just had some scans and went for the doctors, and you know, that was probably the only moment where I was like, a friend of mine had to retire from rugby because of a neck injury, and his vertebra had been displaced, and you know, that was starting to go through my mind is how severe this injury is.
Yep.
And I picked up my phone and I was like, I was the last 10 guys to come down, so I started watching. And my fiance and Gaspari from Crank Brothers were down in the hospital with me, but you know, they're waiting on the benches, and I'm in this bed trying to hold my phone, and then I go and get all excited, and they come over like, what's going on? I was like, oh, I finished 10th overall, I'm protected for next season. And they're like, well, you're not going to even think about maybe retiring. I was like, there's no way, I'm 10th, I'm protected, doesn't matter, things are good. And it gave me a bit of hope and excitement in the hospital.
Being second is like, can be hard, you know, especially I think behind your teammates. But I think he's younger and he really like appreciating every moment, every good moment. So for sure in my case, if I finish second behind him, I'm like, fuck it. Because I'm older, you know, I'm 5 years old more than him. So
you have less time.
Yeah, you have plenty of time to play with. For me, it's not the same, so...
Fort William's a bit different to everything else on the World Cup circuit. Are you a fan of that track?
No. No, actually, I'm not a fan of it whatsoever. I mean, I think that place is like... I felt like when I came home, I was like, man, I feel like I was out there at a race for 6 months after being there for 3 days. I was like, this place is just like going to war.
The computer tells you everything, but at the end of the day, you just take the fucking brakes off and go fast.
Like, it's pretty simple.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to Season 4, Episode 10 of the pod. So for the next couple of episodes, I thought we'd do something a little bit different and throw it open to Jack and Emily to choose our guests. The only stipulation being that they have to choose people who we've never had on the pod before, and I can assure you, they've not let us down. First up is Emily, and it'll be no surprise to many of you, but she picked a rider who waited until he was 31 to have his breakout season, and I'm really excited about welcoming Bernard Kerr onto the podcast. But first, I need to do a little bit of housekeeping and give a shout out to a few people. The first is at Primoz on the Vital Forum, who tracked down where I got the Windmasters to replace Rob Warner rumour from. It was first mooted by user K Stack in the comments section on the Wind TV snowshoe track walk video. And it's a relief to hear that I didn't dream it. So thank you very much for that. I did actually think at one point, have I made this up? No response from Wynn on that one. But I did see he was filming with GMBN last week. So maybe it has got legs. Jack, Emmy, have either of you heard anything on that one?
I didn't.
No.
But I think he was in Barcelona with first Valencia and in Barcelona with Bernard. So maybe we could throw a little question in there for Bernie. We'll see what he says.
Yeah, I think he's silenced. I tagged him in loads of stuff on Instagram and his silence perhaps speaks volumes, do you reckon?
So is it just that someone made a comment on a video saying he would be good at replacing Rob Warner, or is it actually someone who knows something who said he might replace Rob Warner?
Not sure if Kay Stack knows anything. It wasn't like, it would be good to see you, I don't think. I think it was like, have you signed with Discovery yet or something like that? I can't quite remember.
Right, okay.
I also need to mention Fake Tape Machine, who was the winner of the Making Up the Numbers Fantasy League Mini League on Pink Bike with a whopping 5,230 points. So congratulations to you. And the final person I need to give a shout out to is Martin Whiteley. Keen listeners will remember that I asked Greg Minnaert if he had ever had a season without a World Cup podium. And Greg couldn't remember, and I didn't know the answer either, but I knew Martin would, and he dropped me a note to say, since Greg got his first World Cup podium in 2000, he's only had one season where he failed to podium. That was 2018, when he broke his arm training just before Fort William and missed a bunch of rounds. So thank you for that, Martin. If you haven't checked Martin's recent doubleheader on Downtime, it's a great listen, as is the Jordi Cortez one on Vital. Shout out to Jordi. Which segs nicely into our first team rumour. So there's a promo going around for a Ghost Factory Racing team video called Breaking the Tape. Either of you see that?
No.
I've seen the trailer and I've seen Martin in it.
That's what I was going to say.
Like,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. It looks like it focuses on XC quite a lot, but Martin's in it quite a lot. And I think the first episode drops this week. We know Martin will be back on the World Cup circuit next year. No downhill bike on the market at the moment, but do you think Ghost could be his destination?
I don't know. Well, they have a Enduro bike and they have a Slavic, am I right? So, I mean, why not? But I know he's the representative or the team manager for cross country as well. So maybe he's going to just focus on cross country. I don't know.
Yeah. I think he said somewhere he was talking to a couple of brands and he was coming back to downhill.
Mm-hmm. That's what I heard too. So it could be.
Yeah. You heard anything, Jack? Any ideas where Martin might end up?
No, absolutely not. I'd seen that he'd been signing bits and bobs and I'm sure he's listening now. So, yeah. Martin, drop George another email. Let us know what's going on. Or maybe even just give us a little clue. Tease us a little bit. Next episode.
So the only other rumour I'm aware of was that Cube are hiring a third mechanic. So Max has just re-signed with them on a multi-year contract. It looks like Danny's going to be there for a third season at least, as he's been out testing with them recently. Any ideas about a third rider? Who'd be a good fit at Cube with Danny and Max?
Are any young German or Austrian riders coming through? I'm trying to think.
That's an Emmy question.
Well, maybe it's anyone really, because there's a lot of people sort of looking for teams. I mean, we don't know where Angel Serrara is going to go. We don't know where Greg Liasson is going to go. Maybe he's going to be a better rider than we think.
And Norco had some riders that need a new home. So
there's a lot of people out and about, so I'm not sure.
I was going to ask about Blenke, actually, because, you know, it looked like he was heading towards retirement, and then he grabbed eighth at Mont Saint Anne, just won Crankworx Rotorua. Don't look like he's winding down, does it?
No. And he's always doing well, like in the also like the smaller races, like Crankworx, like always winning national champs or like real close to it. Yeah. So all these little races probably give him like that extra push that he needs to hang on and maybe try to like get a podium again. I think if you get a top five, I think he's gonna retire.
You know, when brands are looking for riders, how much like importance do they place on like the style and the name, like someone like Blenky, would they choose someone like Blenky, do you think, over someone who's younger and regularly in the top 30?
I don't know. It depends a bit what kind of rider you already have in your roster. Like, if you have someone like Danny Hart, obviously you're going to go maybe for someone younger.
Yeah.
But because Danny has a style and he has consistency and everything. But if you have like only young people on your team, maybe you go for someone like Becky that has experience and style. But obviously Blenky has it all. I mean, it's just like whatever you're searching for. But I think I'm not really sure he will have a trouble finding sponsors, but
no.
I could be wrong. I don't know what you think, Jack, but...
Yeah, I think pretty much the same. It'll certainly need to be somebody that Danny gets on with. And I know that Sam does spend time with Danny when he's over in the UK, especially with them having kids a similar age. So would be a good fit. Obviously, as you just said, very marketable rider. Everyone loves him. So yeah, he won't struggle to find a new home.
So there's not a lot else out there, team rumour-wise. Have you guys heard anything?
I've got something for you.
Oh, go on then.
I've heard that Remy Mayer-Smith and Luke Mayer-Smith are going to Giant both.
Oh, we said that last time. Keep up.
No.
Yeah, we did. Yeah. I've said that.
You said that.
Yeah, I said that one.
But I can tell you for sure.
All right.
Confirmation.
It's a confirmation. But probably you said, how can you remember you saying that?
Yeah, that's been...
Where did you hear that from?
Oh, you got me all excited then.
Yeah, he's been kicking around for a while as that one, I think.
Okay.
That'll be a good team. With Remy Tyrion and those
I've
two.
Got another one, but I can't tell you, though. This is secret.
Tell me, and then I'll tell George and everyone else, because I don't care.
So let's see if I can get out of you, because I've got a gut feeling it might be one. So I was thinking about the rumours we've discussed over the last two episodes, and I was having to think about the spaces that will become available if those rumours happen. So probably the best place to start would be Madison Saracen. If Jordan, Harry and Vero do all leave, as is rumoured, who do you think might come in to fill those spots?
Well, Cam just told me she heard that Madison might quit, might don't have a team at all. That's what she just told me. She's like, she heard that somewhere. So that's the second thing I heard. So I don't know. Then if that's true, then where is Matt Walker going? But maybe it's not
Holy,
true.
Holy, that would be huge.
And if it's not true, then it's Cam's fault.
Well, I think that's very unlikely. Possible, but unlikely. And I know that from talking with Saracen myself through my team, they told me that they were quite happy with their own factory team and weren't looking to add to it. I know that Matt's very happy there. Matt's a friend of mine. I'm going on a stag do with him fairly soon. So I'd be amazed if it is true. But I anything can happen.
It's Cam's
anything
mechanic who told her, I think.
Is that the lad who's always drunk?
No.
I'm joking.
That's not the one.
I'm joking.
So... let's say Madison Saracen is still in the game. Will likes a particular type of rider, doesn't he? He likes racers rather than people who are big on socials. What kind of rider would Matt Walker want on the team? Because that's probably the thing they're looking for, isn't it? Somebody to support Matt. Yeah. British, you'd say British, would you say, Jack?
yeah, for sure. With it being Madison Saracen, they've always... They've had one foreign rider on there. I can't remember his
Alex, name. Alex Marion rode for him for a bit, didn't
he? Alex was there, yeah. Yeah. I was thinking of, I can't remember his name, Japanese. Was he Japanese? I'm sure he was at Saracen a while back. Oh, I can't remember his name.
It wasn't Yuki, was the other
one. That's him. Yuki was there. Yeah, he was there. Yeah, apparently for a buy-in, but apparently he was there a few years back. But yeah, I mean, Matt's top five rider, isn't he? So they're not going to get another top 10 rider. So yeah, I honestly think it's probably more likely that they look to replenish their junior and youth stock. I can't remember if we mentioned it, but I'm pretty sure that George Madley, the youth rider, is going to Madison from everything I've heard.
I heard that as well, yeah.
So he'll be there as a second-year youth. And then the question will be, do they replace Jordan? But Owen Rick is probably the fastest second-year junior of 2023 in the UK. And as far as I'm aware, he's coming to me. So
yeah.
If they are But it's junior, then they're going to have to probably look elsewhere in terms of which country they're signing from. So be interesting.
Somebody like Luke Williamson?
Yeah. Yeah, there's no reason why not. He's young, he's fast. Yeah. I can see that team just staying Matt for a year.
Yeah.
I think it sounds like it's been a rather unhappy camp for 12 months with lots of politics, should we call it, without diving into any more details. And I think they're probably just thinking, let's just get shit steady again. That would be my approach as the team manager if I was if Will was allowed to decide himself. My approach would be get the ship steady again and then look to expand.
Yeah. So if Scott take Kolb to replace Florent Payet, who goes to Atherton to replace him? Rumours of Ronan Dunne. This is that was the one I thought your face is saying.
You mentioned that last time, didn't you?
You mentioned that as a maybe. I haven't talked to anyone about that, but it could be. But yeah, they're probably talking, but I've asked Bernard for rumours. They didn't tell me anything. Except the one that you already know.
That was the one I thought I might prize out of you if it was a definite.
No, it's another one.
A definite happening. Well, we'll leave the rumours there. A few people saying nice things about the hypothetical question in the last episode. So let's do another one of those. So let's imagine you guys are building a downhill team each, and you're picking two male riders and one female rider. Forget marketability. It's just purely race success in 2023, a one-year deal. I'm going to give you three batches of riders to choose from. So let's start with your lead rider. And these guys all finished between 8th and 13th in the overall in 2022. So your choices from Aaron Gwynn, Danny Hart, Greg Minar, Thibaut Dupréla, and Matt Walker. Who you choosing? Who would you put your money on for 2023 from those?
Ladies first, unless you want time to think, because I know my answer.
No, but like you said, who is your money on or who's going to pick in the team? Because for me, they're two different things. You know what I mean? Like you want to take a rider that you like. I want to pick a rider that I like as well.
All right. Okay. Yeah. You know, like riding, it's like your team.
You know what I mean? Like it's someone that you think is going to be fast, but you also want someone that
fits.
For me and Matt Walker.
So my question there is, who on that list don't you like? Clearly someone.
Sorry. Come on. No,
how many of them on the list?
All of them except Mark Walker. No, I'm just kidding. No, but it's just like not like in a sense of like who do you want to work with?
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean.
Exactly. So I want to work with Matt Walker because I think he's young and he's just like has proven himself, and I think he's a good lead rider.
Yeah, Jack.
Yeah, and it'd be exciting to see him under a different tent.
Yep.
That's something I've always said. Like, obviously, I've known Matt since he was out there, went on a riding holiday with him and his dad when he was like 13. And I've always thought it would be exciting to see him in a different camp. Obviously, he does extremely well in the camp he's in, but
yeah,
it would just be quite cool to see him on a Specialized or on a Santa Cruz or a Pivot or something. And
I think
a faster bike, you mean? A faster bike, you mean?
No, I genuinely don't even mean that. I actually just spent a different program, but maybe if he was on one of the big bikes, then.
But can I argue that? Because like you look at that, I know you look at that bike though, and look what it's doing.
It's a rider, man.
It is.
He was on a wooden stick, and he'd be the fastest man down there.
Yep.
Like that's how these companies market their stuff. Like that's why they spend all the money on the big riders to make their bikes look great. Anyway.
All right.
So a tough one for me because, like I said, Matt's a good friend of mine. Gwynny and Minar are obviously like legends. Danny's always going to produce great results. But my choice would be Thibaut Dupréla. And that, for me, is because I run a development program and I just see so much potential there that's not been, it hasn't done what
harnessed.
It can do just yet. And I would love to work with Thibaut myself as his performance coach. So that would be my choice there.
Okay, cool. And your support rider, these guys all finished between 15th and 24th in 2022. So you've got Charlie Hatton, Dylan Levesque, Dakota Norton, Angel Suarez, and Lucas Shaw.
It was a really easy one for me, Lucas Shaw.
Is that because?
No, it's just like, I think he should be, or he could almost be in the first
five. Yeah.
Because it's just like his potential is just like.
He's a big hitter, isn't he?
And he's such a good guy, and he has a Swiss girlfriend, and you know, he's spread the kids. He's
you just want to spend more time with Yolanda, don't you? That's all it is.
Yeah, he's in the team for sure.
Angel's had a few podiums, though. He's nearly in that.
Yeah, but so's Dak.
Bracket. Yeah.
So, yeah. Yeah, I mean, for sure, Dak, Angel, and Luca are your kind of three heavy hitters there. That, I mean, was Angel number seven or some last year? Or he was in the top 10 at one point, wasn't he? And then Luca podiumed at
But then Dylan gets top 15 almost every race, and he's also young, you know.
He's coming for sure. Definitely. That's what I was just about to say. You've got
and Charlie, like
Dylan and Charlie, who are there on like an upward curve. It's again an incredibly tough choice, and you could probably guarantee that whichever one you chose, you'd get halfway through the season and go, "Ah, shit, I should have had the other one." But I'd choose Charlie, just because, in my opinion, he has one of the, if not the best riding style on the circuit. I absolutely love watching that kid ride. Hinge and elbows, and the way he clearly links his legs with what he's doing up front with his arms is. It just looks like it balances the bike perfectly, and it's a very coachable technique as well. And having him around for everyone else in the team would be great. And also, he just seems to be just ticking boxes over the last few years. And I'd like to think next year is going to be a big one. So Charlie would be my support rider there.
Excellent. And elite women, one from these four, and they all finish between 7th and 14th. So you've got Jess Blewett, Millie Johnsett, Anna Newkirk and Louise Ferguson.
Oh, this is so hard for me.
Because you want to pick Louise Ferguson?
No, I think they all have something different. I think Louise is like probably the rider with the most, like, who could progress the most in racing. But I don't know if she has like the racer's mind.
Yeah.
You know, like, because she wants to be a better rider. But I don't know if she's like a racing killer. Like Cam would be. And that's something really important if you want to race downhill. And, well, Jess Blewett is for sure the fastest rider, but she's not the most consistent. She has a lot of crashes, a lot of injuries. And so does Millie. So I think I'll get Anna Newport because she was born in Switzerland and I know her for a while. And I think when Cam stops racing in Switzerland, there's no more Swiss riders around. There's four girls at the Swiss champs. There's no one. And Anna has an American passport, but I think she'll have a Swiss passport soon, and it will be a chance for us to have like some kind of a future.
Another one, yeah, for sure.
Because there is no one. There's like 13 years old girls, but in between there's like maybe nothing. One junior or a second one, but there's not a lot of people around, and I want to support the people that are close also in my area. And I think Anna has a great potential, but she doesn't believe in herself enough.
Yeah.
I think I will be able to like give her that step up, that confidence, because she's a top 10 rider and she could get a podium easily if she would like believe in herself a bit more.
Yeah, for sure.
So that's why I'll pick her.
I've spent quite a bit of time with her through the SR Sun Tour connection. She's a lovely girl as well. Like she's really nice. So
yeah, she's awesome.
It's nice to see her.
All four, but I think it would be my pick.
Yeah.
Because I'm a Swiss patriot. That's why.
Nothing wrong with that.
No, I'm not.
I think I'd, again, tough one, but I think I'd go with Jess. I think she's probably kind of same kind of ilk as Thibaut, same kind of, as you just said, Emmy, lots of flair, lots of pace, just needs a little bit of coaching, a little bit of guidance, and she could be, you know, obviously winning lots of races. So I think that would be my choice.
Would you listen to you though?
I don't know. I've literally we've never said a word to each other, so who knows?
I genuinely thought on the two sets of guys, I thought, there's no clear winner here. But on the women's, I thought you would both pick Jess Blewett. I thought she was kind of a little bit ahead of the others.
Realistically, you have to, because I think she's a step ahead of the others. But
yeah.
It's someone that had so many injuries already, and I don't know, like, she's someone also that has huge aspirations, you know, like she wants to race hardline and she wants to do all this kind of stuff, which is, I think, is awesome.
Yeah.
But it also involves a lot of risks, you know, when you are in that mindset. And I don't know if I can as a team manager, I will be able to deal with that. You know, like, I'll be like, oh my God.
George, did you tell us what yours were? I don't think you did.
Yeah.
I hadn't picked.
Then.
I'll have to do it on the spot then.
You wrote it.
Oh. Yeah, I'd throw my money in Thibaut Dupreuil.
Yeah, for sure. I knew that.
That next one is tough.
Yeah, that next one is the tough one. Because I think Dakota, if he was more consistent, I'd probably go Dakota Norton. But yeah, I would have to go Lucas Shaw, I think, yeah. Because Angel isn't consistent either.
Luca is a sensible choice. I love Charlie, and I'm crossing my fingers for next year for Charlie. So.
And then Jess Blewett on the other one. Yeah.
All right.
So, yeah, I like these questions. They provoke some good debate. Right, we'll be back with Bernard Kerr after these messages.
Hi, I'm Ollie Wilkins.
And I'm Ben, the Deaconator Deacon.
We've just spent the last week at Ride Southern Spain.
Having a fantastic time.
We have.
We've ridden countless amounts of enduro and epic downhill trails.
That's right, they have a workshop, swimming pool, pizza oven, fire pit. They've even got a donkey here, dude.
You get a free beer if you ride, you know?
That's all right, is that mad?
So we've just dropped into this first trail of the day. Cheeky little off-piste line here. Nice little dusty berm at the bottom to catch you.
Woo-hoo-hoo! £600 a week includes accommodation, airport transfers, 6 days of uplifts and guiding.
Check out their social media or website to book your holiday at Ride Southern Spain.
Ride Southern Spain.
Time to make your bike ride like the pros. World Cup level suspension, tuning and servicing from the expert team at JTech Suspension. Built off years of knowledge and experience, the team at JTech Suspension will service and tune your suspension to make sure it's in tune with your riding style and terrain to shave those vital seconds off your next race run. Visit j-techsuspension.co.uk today and see how their expert team can transform your suspension performance.
So this is one of those weird things that happens in life. Bernard Kerr has been racing forever, 261 results on Roots and Rain. I've been racing since 2014, 76 races, both obviously UK-based, but until about 2 minutes ago, we'd never met before. Welcome to the podcast, Bernard. How's it going?
Good, yeah. Thanks for having me on. Busy, enjoying the rain in the UK again, but yeah, having a good time.
Excellent. You just got back from Barcelona, was it?
Yeah, Barcelona. I got back this morning, like 8 a.m. this morning, yeah.
And how long were you there for?
I was in Barcelona for 1 day and Valencia for two.
Was it work or was it fun?
Kind of fun. We went, me and myself and Wynn went to watch the MotoGP for 2 days. So yeah. That was awesome. And then we rode like hardtails around Barcelona, like little kids again for a day, which was pretty cool.
So when I was looking at those races on Roots and Rain, I did a little head to head and we've only actually been at the same race once. Round three of the 2016 BDS at Bala. I'm going to ask you a question about it. You were eighth that day with a 3:12, and I crossed the line in 5 minutes and 7 seconds. So I must have flatted or something. But pop quiz, can you remember who took the win that day?
At Bala.
Yeah, 2016. I've got a clue if you need one.
Who would do good at Bala? That's what I'm trying to think, whether it was like Mark Beaumont or Joe Smith or someone, I don't know.
You need to think way more out of the box.
Yeah, it was his only national win. So far, probably his only national win ever.
Harry Heath?
No, that's too far out of the box. I'll tell you, Innes Graham.
Innes Graham, no way.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I remember that as well.
I would not have guessed that. That's wild.
I think he was standing between G and Steve on the podium. I think I remember.
He's like a gnarly good rider. Scottish
stick next to those two.
Yeah, he's got crazy results all over the show and years apart, but he's got
he did so well in the EWS. Like,
yeah,
like,
yeah.
He's just come back, yeah.
So 2013 was the last year you raced nationals regularly. Is that a conscious thing or not to do them, or is it just time?
No way. It's honestly, it'll be more time because we do World Cups and Crankworks and Hardline, and I do some street races and other things. And if you want to be competitive, I think at World Cups these days, you've got to ride mountains a lot and a lot of downhill. And to race nationals, it takes a lot of time. If you're in Europe, it takes at least a day travel each way. You're not going to ride much when you're there. Okay, you'll race, but for the amount of riding and the amount of coverage you get, it takes a lot of time and a lot of money.
Yeah.
And I don't see the benefit really either way for World Cups, whether you're trying to get sponsors. Yeah, the amount of coverage you get is not worth the £2,000 or £1,500 it would cost me to go to one national.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, it's like a money and time, I guess, thing.
So you'll have to excuse me here because I've been down a bit of a rabbit hole.
Good.
You, Jack and Brayton are all around the same age. And I remember you were all on the 2017 Worlds team together. And whilst I was on Roots and Rain, I was like, I'll have a look at some stats here. And this is going to blow your mind. So you've all got around 260 races on there. And there's been 71 races where the three of you have all raced together. 71, yeah. So if I tell you that your combined race time for those 71 races is 4 hours, 36 minutes and 53 seconds, tell me if you think Jack and Brayton are faster or slower.
I like to back myself, so I want to say I'm faster, but...
Of course you will.
Of course I will. I reckon... At nationals, though, I reckon they both smoked me a lot on nationals. I was never that good at nationals.
Yeah, it's a lot of races. 71's a lot of World Cups, isn't it?
It is, but I've taken a while to get good at World Cups. So I think Brayton might be ahead of me and Jack maybe behind. Or I don't know. Jack had a real good year in, like, what was it, like 2014 maybe when he did good at Valdosol? I'm guessing at the year there.
Right.
It was 2 years in a row. I remember Jack did really good at like Valdosol and had like good seasons. Like, you know, when you're on a roll, you go well.
So Jack's figures are a bit skewed because he had a slow start. The second race when the three...
You mean I was shit?
Yeah.
Say it how it is.
The second race when you raced together, Jack lost a minute to the pair of you at Fort William. So he's Jack's... You were on... 4 hours, 36 minutes and 53 seconds. And Jack was on 4 hours, 43 minutes and 16 seconds.
Crazy.
Brayton is on 4 hours, 36 minutes and 48 seconds. He's 5 seconds ahead of you.
Bastard, see?
That's insane.
Five seconds after over 4.5 hours of racing. How crazy
is that?
That's
pretty crazy.
But you've got more wins.
One more hardline win against him and you'll have him.
Yeah, I lost a minute on him there.
Anyway, what I was trying to show was that you guys are all around the same age. You've been racing forever. And if you were a betting man, you'd probably say 2022, your best results. Coming into 2022, your best results were probably behind you. You had that sweet spot around 2016, 17, when you got 7th at Leogang, 5th in Val d'Isol, 5th Leogang, 5th Le Bret. Did you feel... that might be the case coming into this season, or did it feel a bit different?
Feel that what my sweet spot had gone, or feel that I was
doing? Yeah.
No, I felt like every year I feel like I'm going to do good, or I wouldn't turn up. If I'm honest, if I didn't think I was maybe going to get a podium, I wouldn't turn up. So, no, I genuinely believe like every year, I think, especially this year, that I was on for it. And yeah, no, I felt pretty confident. I trained really hard. Everything was good. We had new tires with Continental. So, yeah, I was pretty stoked for it and pretty like confident, I guess.
Jack, do you feel the same? Do you feel coming into the...
Same mentality. The target isn't podium, obviously. My target is if I was going into a season thinking, oh, I'm on a good day, I'm not going to be pushing top 20, then yeah, I would start doing something else or go into more of a purely management coaching role. But yeah, exactly the same mentality. If you go into it thinking, yeah, I've had a good off season.
You've got to feel good, yeah.
Exactly. Otherwise, as a racer, you just want to enjoy it. So there's no point.
Stuck. Yeah, you've got to feel good about yourself and like that. You know, I guess you're going to achieve what you want to achieve, or you're going to achieve like, I've put this work in. If I don't achieve this, it's not worth it. So you've got to feel like, yeah, the work is worth it. Yeah.
So early 30s isn't old by any stretch. Do you think we're kind of writing off riders a bit too soon nowadays, or is it?
I do.
I don't think anyone's writing us off. That maybe, but I don't know. Everyone's on such good bikes now. Like it's 10, 15 years ago, someone could be on a bike twice as good as someone else. And we have great equipment, but everyone has pretty good equipment now. It's pretty, you're fighting for tenths rather than fighting for like 5 seconds against a lot of people. So I think we have that. That's cool. Maybe it's easier because we're going smoother with like nice suspension these days than the old shit everyone used to have. But yeah, I think if you want, you've got years left in it. But yeah. I've done 15 World Cup seasons now, so it's quite a few.
Yeah, you beat me now. You have 15, I got 14.
After war.
So before we run through your whole season, let's start with the important bits. So tell us a bit of the story about the team bus. How did it come about?
Team bus was, we needed to get rid of the truck. because the track was getting old and stuff. And I looked at the option of like a real big, either like an Arctic, like a lot of the teams have. They're a huge hassle. They have to get tested all the time, et cetera, et cetera. Or just another big rigid, but everyone has a truck. And I was like, how can we be different? How can we stand out or have something cooler? And Ollie's friend, Seb, Ollie Wilkins' friend, Seb, works on these school buses in the UK. He's like a plumber on them. We kind of thought about it and I like came up with the idea. And then I was like, I don't know. And then my brother Boris was like, no, I think it's a good idea. And he kind of like backed my idea of it. He like gave me confidence in my like, you know, I could maybe do this. What do you think? Because before I actually got the first truck, I was trying to buy a double decker bus. That was my idea for my first team truck, was a double decker bus to be different. But they're too high for Europe. Everything has to be 4 or 4.2 meters in Europe. It can't be higher, or you've got such a headache on your hands. You'll get grounded in Germany and all sorts, which I've learned along the way. I've learned a lot about a lot about trucking. But so I originally wanted that, couldn't, got the truck. And then I kind of came back to this idea of a school bus and trying to save money as well. Like if you buy a rigid and do it well, you're looking at like 120, 150 grand. It's like not a cheap thing to go from scratch. And I wanted to go from scratch. So it was how we wanted it. So kind of did that. Then we're at Snowshoe. There was some there. Jumped on one of the shuttle vehicles there and was like, yeah, this thing's rad. So talked to the guy in the UK, actually before that, in the middle of summer last year, so like June or July, before Hardline, we went and viewed the guy that builds them in the UK. And then, yeah, the day after Snowshoe, we drove from Snowshoe to like Philadelphia, basically. We drove like 8 hours from the race last year, test drove this one bus that my brother found online and was like, yeah, this is the one, let's get it. Bought it like 2 weeks later. Shipped her over.
Excellent.
Yeah, that's cool. Yeah, I really enjoy to be in the bus. This is like very,
it's cool.
Like, everyone loves it. Everyone that comes like to the team, they're like, oh yeah, let's see the bus. So yeah, I think you had a pretty great idea there. So yeah, running through your season, first running Lords, yeah, you see the 33rd.
Yeah.
And then I think, yeah, you had a bit of trouble in seeding, but then you had a good final until you had that mechanical that was a bit annoying.
Yeah.
Like a spoke to the tape or something yeah, that you could control. But 20th was not the worst result considering a mechanical.
No, it was a weird one, Laws. I think everyone struggled to get into it. I had so much to get rid of the bus and everything. And then I think practice was so weird. Jack will know as well, and you were there, Emily, to see it. Like, how you waited an hour and a half, 2 hours between each run.
Yeah.
I don't think it would normally get to me. I just struggled to get into it. I couldn't find the race pace that I know I had. I had the fitness. I had the race pace. Yeah. I really struggled, I think, in time practice to like go quick. And then even the race, I was just like, in qualifying, I was like, I don't know. Came 33rd and I was like, what am I doing? And then really worked out. Race day morning, I was like, right, we're on. We got to go quick. Felt night and day difference. And then, yeah, I got a slow flat like halfway down because the spoke went through the rim tape. And
yeah,
everyone's like, oh, your splits were kind of okay though, like whatever. And I'm like, no, I know I'm on pace right now. And like the bottom third of the track there was like my best sector all week. And I know I felt good there. So yeah, 20th, I was pretty gutted, but I was like, I know I'm going quick this year. So you're like a bit annoyed, but you know you're on speed. So it was a weird start for sure.
Yeah, then you didn't go to Fort William National. George is written in the script and your reason why. And I laughed a lot about that because I know how you love that track. you went and practiced, right, with your mechanic. You went and did a couple of runs there.
Yeah, but the National's a tough one though, man. It's so far, so much money. You're probably not going to ride much. I think half the time between me and Emily, probably Jack as well, has been cancelled or we've had to push them over the years. So I was
have to walk up to like the motorway to do it because the gondola couldn't work. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I know why you wouldn't go, but you went despite your love for this rough track. And I think you paid off in Fort William because you seeded 5th, was probably your best result there ever, right?
Best qualifying. It was my best qualifying to date, even, I think, really. I got 4th in time practice or whatever it's seeding to be at World Champs. But otherwise, yeah, it was my best qualifying ever.
Yeah. And then obviously you had something with your bash guard in the race, so you can pedal the last sector. So you finished 16th. So obviously two races and kind of two different, like kind of weird mechanicals, like unlucky mechanicals, we'll say. Is it kind of hard as a team manager as well, like to have keep this mechanical quiet as well? Because obviously you're a racer, but then
Yeah, no, because like the Fort William one was my fault. I like know where I did it. I kind of just like went too far off a rock, like pushing, and just snapped the chain device off. It like jammed the cranks for a bit. So I tried to pedal on it, like jammed, got them back round. I was like, right, the cranks are round, don't pedal. Just nurse this sucker home. Like you can hit it good. So I just didn't pedal the rest because it was jammed. And then the motorway, I cased one jump, which was just shit riding. Cost myself so much time and lost time here, lost time there. Like I should have been able to get a top 10 still, really, if I'd hit the motorway another bit's good. But yeah, and then finished without the chain device. So I actually could have pedaled, but at the time I thought it was still on jammed. But yeah, it was just my fault. I just smashed it in a rock, it jammed and then came off somewhere. So yeah, you could say you've got to keep it quiet, but it's not like a faulty product or a bike thing. That was just me landing on a rock. So no, it was kind of my fault in that one. Just annoying to come 16th.
So after that, Leo, again, I know that's, we all know it's a track that you love, and especially now with the new part at the bottom. I can't really remember. I think you crashed in seeding as well because you're like 101st. So
I crashed in the stumps in seeding.
Oh yeah, true. Because you're like just split, so like probably like around normally, and the top bit is not the best part.
Yeah.
And then in a race, well, I remember that you were on the top ten splits, and the bottom obviously is your better section, and then you crashed.
Yeah, just split out, just silly mistake, which I was so mad. I had two silly mistakes. Don't know why, if I put too much pressure on myself, or I knew I could do a podium there, and I was like, don't know, too excited maybe, or I think I went too slow, like tried to ride safe, and then yeah, just overthinking it, riding not like I should, overthinking it maybe. And yeah, Leo Gang was the worst.
Yeah, I know, because I know how much you love this track and how you can do well in practice. You looked amazing, and then you could see in the run that you were like maybe didn't really know how much you wanted to push or not. And
yeah, I think maybe it was still like dialing in the new tires and riding everything and just trying to learn. Like, who knows? When I look back on it, I still don't even know like why I crashed there. It was so stupid. I got through like the hard bits, did this, did that, and then
crashed
like an easy bit on near the entry of the woods, and then right at the end, which was stupid. Yeah.
So at this point, you're like 22nd in Evo, so you're not protected still, which is also an issue. And after that, it seemed like kind of like the turning point of your season, result wise, at least, maybe not riding wise, but like result wise, because you in Lanzarote, you seeded 15th and finished top 10, like with a 9th place. And then you kept it going in Val Nord as well with like a 9th seeding, finished 14th. I know you had a huge crash in Val Nord as well.
Two huge crashes.
So it was not the best weekend behind the scenes, but you still kept it like.
Yeah, I think. Andorra for me, like I was really stoked at Lenzerheide. I was 0.7 off the podium in Lenzerheide, but like that was, so was everyone. It was such a tight track, whatever. So I went into Andorra, been like, I can kill this. I had a huge crash before qualifying, qualified 9th, you know, and was like, oh, well, sick. Like I can do good here. And then just rode a little bit safe my run, had a good one. But again, it was, times are so tight. I think I was 1 point something off the podium and I was gutted. That 14th for me wasn't worth it. Mm-hmm. I like remember saying to Emma, I was like, yeah, this result, getting 14th here for the sacrifice is not worth it. Like I was so mad at getting 14th there. I was like, for all the time you put in the off season and things I don't do when I want to go ride motocross, or I want to go do this, or I want to go see my friends. I remember saying, I was like, this is not worth it, the 14th. So I think that kind of helped after that. I was like, I need to do better than this. This is shit. I was so mad at that 14th, which seems like a good result. I think after I got 9th and knowing that run wasn't the best.
Yeah.
So yeah, it was a weird one, Andorra, but yeah, definitely started to go the right way.
Do you have a favorite type of track? Because we'll get onto Hardline in a bit, but doing well somewhere like Andorra, it's completely.
I always love Andorra. It was a new weird track. Like
yeah.
I actually didn't really like the top section. It was super hard to know if you were going quick. Like some runs, you know, you'd be like, oh, I think I hit that quick then. Or I'd look at my GoPro and I'd be a second quicker through it. And it felt worse. Like you really hard to judge the top section there because it was this big sweepy open. Yeah. So after that, it was pretty cool. It was pretty one line and just hanging on. So it was hard to pull time. But favorite track normally, yeah, just the harder it is, I normally do good. So if it's more technical, more, it's not just one line. Like Andorra was just hanging on and bombing.
Yeah.
Just hang on, go as fast as you can, hope for the best, carry speed. Yeah, it was kind of like a mindless track.
Mm-hmm.
Like there was a bit of techie stuff at the bottom that I was good on in quali that I was shit on in the race because I tried to ride safe a bit, which is stupid. But yeah, otherwise, yeah, that's not normally my favorite, just hanging on. Like Leo Gang is real technical. You got to ride smart or have good exit to the turns at the top. So my favorite tracks would just be the harder, more technical ones.
Mm-hmm. But I guess Snowshoe is a pretty technical track, but obviously it's kind of flatter, so it's a little bit different, but carry speed is a huge aspect. So I guess it would have been also one of the aspects that suited you this time, because you could like really see how your carry speed through stuff. Obviously big mistakes in your still in your run where you got second, but yeah. Like almost going over the bars there, you got me screaming in front of the screen. But yeah, did you feel like you're riding any differently at this point of the season, or
no, it was like just
this element of now or never?
Nah, not at all. I think like I had to do an e-bike shoot on the Monday in Morzine, and I had to fly out Sunday, and I had to like, so the whole team flew out to Snowshoe from Geneva on Saturday or Sunday. Like I dropped them at the airport and they all flew out while I had to go up to Morzine for 2 days and do an e-bike shoot. So I actually was in Morzine on the Monday of the Snowshoe race doing an e-bike shoot, flew home, I think Monday night, and then flew out Tuesday maybe, or Wednesday, Tuesday I flew out to Snowshoe. So I kind of had this fuck, definitely not the best situation. We've got to make the best of it, make it happen. And yeah, it was not ideal, but like Pivot needed it done. I'd kind of like, there was a mess up. So I had to get this e-bike photo shoot done. And yeah, I don't know, just with that and then the rain, like I'd never been a fan of Snowshoe from the first time we went, but I was like, right, you got to turn this around. If it's wet, it's going to be super hard. Let's go. Like I'll go hard. The wetter it is, it's going to suck. Everyone's going to hate it. And I don't know why that week I just had this attitude that like kind of everything's against me. If the track's harder, that's not against me. That's me. I'll be good. So I think going in, knowing it's going to be wet, I like flew there with a good attitude.
Yeah, that's cool. I mean, from we could see on the screen, you had one big moment, but like I guess like you knew that we could see in the finish from the reaction when Amaury like won for 0.4, like you could see that your run wasn't perfect though. So do you have a lot of other moments where you did mistakes, or
it was just that one and just above that I like stalled out, probably lost like half a second on one bit. It was pretty good. Like I was a bit slow at the top. First practice run of the day, I crashed into a tree. It was my only crash in Snowshoe. Well, I said I kind of went off track one other time. In that, yes, they're my only two times where a crash or off track with that morning. So like the fourth turn in the morning, I crashed into a tree, snapped the lever like 15 seconds in. So I did one practice run on the race day. So I did one run. I blew off the track where I got sketchy in my run that you all saw, pushed back up, rode it, got through it kind of fine. But yeah, I only did one practice run on the race day. And then the run was pretty dialed. Like that bit was a bit slow. I lost some speed, but then I YOLO'd through the next bit. So I hit that really good. And then I was slow on like just before the exit of the woods. I drifted a bit low just before you come onto that straight, like flat sprint. And yeah. I think even just without that one tiny mistake, I'd have had the 0.4. Like you can't even see it. Like Elliot saw it on the camera and like people that know see I slow down a bit and I drift. I get like a little bit stood up on the like kind of right rocky right-hander. It still looked good. But before that, you drop into the left in the flat sprint, I lost a bit there. But yeah, I don't know. Overall, it was obviously a really solid run in the conditions. But yeah, I lost 0.4 too much.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
So tell us a little bit about the Dream Crusher. What's it like sitting in the hot seat and there's one rider between you and your first World Cup win and you know it's Omri Bayron? Tell us the feeling sitting there.
At the top, I wasn't even that nervous because I thought he was going to get it 100%. So I definitely thought he was going to get it. Like I was like, oh, he'll win for sure. So whatever, like it's pretty cool.
Yeah.
And then he was like 1.8 back. So I was like, well, I've smoked him there. And then it turns out he smoked me somewhere else. But and then Andy Cole's like, you've got it, you've got it. And I was like, honestly, I don't think I do because you're saying it. Like, I really even like reverse psychology and like weird shit. And I'm like, you're saying I've got it too much. It isn't going to fucking happen now. I'm like, shut the fuck up, Andy. And I'm like, no, it won't. And then he started putting it back. I was like, I tell you, it's not going to happen. And I was like, fuck, it might. No, it won't. And you just like, I don't know. It was like a dream, but it wasn't. I was like, didn't really ever think I was going to get it. Like, well, I don't know. It just kind of was all a blur at the end because I was like, it's hard to explain. I was so... So I've only come across into the hot seat in my life a few times, like three or four times, maybe ever.
Yeah.
Like very rarely I've come across into the hot seat ever. Even when I've podiumed, I haven't, you know, before.
Yeah.
So I think that was so big for me that I knew I'd got top three. Then it was like,
yeah,
it was afterwards. I think it got a bit annoying because I was like, geez, I've had such a good day, but it was almost like the best day.
Yeah. Okay.
That was more than everyone's like, oh, well done, mate. It was fit. You either had people telling me well done, or, oh, mate, almost. Yeah. It was, even for me, that's how I felt. And like everyone that came to either congratulate me or whatever, they were either like, dude, so close, or well done. It was such a split like decision of what people would say to me.
Yeah.
So yeah, it was a weird one in this hot seat and everything, I guess. It was a weird, even now looking back, it's a weird day. You almost want to be like so stoked, but it's like, oh, fuck, almost.
Yeah, okay. So to run through it, and then I'm going to change the question afterwards because you've just answered whether you were ecstatic or whether you were pissed or not at the time. He lost 2.4 seconds to you in Sector 2. So you were up at the end of Sector 3, and then Sector 4, he did what he did, and it sounds like you also made that mistake.
I think that was on that tight right-hander, wasn't it?
Yeah, exactly. The rocks, yeah. So 0.7. And then in the last sector, as you just said, 0.4. So I'll turn the question now into how do you feel about it now? Looking back on the weekend, are you elated that you got a second place, or are you sat there?
No, you can't do anything. I'm trying to learn to live with like, you can't be mad at mistakes, like whatever they happen. So yeah, I'm stoked. It like helped me do the season I did. So yeah. I'm stoked, I guess. It's still like, yeah, frustrating when I think about it. But yeah, no, it was sick. It was cool. Like everyone was there. My brother was there. Yeah. Emily, like team, trainer, like a lot of people there, at least this girl, like lady from Pivot that's been with them for so long and I've known. So there was a lot of cool people there that have like been for a lot of the journey. So yeah. It was sick to like see. And I was like, you don't do it for you. There's a huge team behind like everything you do as a rider. And it's crazy how many people help you get that result. And so many people were there. So you're like, it's cool feeling like to almost have done it for them as well. You're like, shit, yeah, we've achieved this. It really is we. Like not even trying to be nice. It's such a sick feeling. You're like, yo, look how many people you can make stoked by riding a bike down a hill fast. Yeah. So that was pretty cool actually. So yeah, no, still pretty happy about it.
Awesome. Did you guys have a good party that evening? Or was
we all like went back to the house, jumped in the hot tub. I was still on like all my kit and everything, which was pretty sick. Nice. We kind of just hung out. Conti Tires had like a pizza bar. They ordered a load of pizza and just everyone had beers and hung out there. So it was pretty chill, but pretty sick actually. It was cool.
Nice. So then obviously we moved the party back into Canada for Mont Saint-Anne, seeded fifth and finished fifth after snowshoe. Was that a result you were happy with?
Yeah, I wanted it to stay wet. I knew the rougher and quicker it got, I would find it a bit hard. When it's technical and hard, when it was wet, like day one, time practice, I think I won by like 3 seconds. I was like, we're on. And I didn't even have a good run, man. I'd had like a tough day. I'd like got flat. I sliced a tire on a rock. And then I was like, oh, I'll just put a good time in. It wasn't honestly even that good. I was 3 seconds up on everyone. I was like, we're on. I was like, just need it to stay wet. If it can stay wet, I might do this. And all week, I was like, the only people I'm worried about is Amory and Finn.
Yeah.
I was like, Finn looks good, but if it stays wet, you know, I think I can get him if it stays wet. And it started drying and drying and drying. So I was like, shit, like it's going to be tough. So yeah, I was so happy with fit. Like I was gut when I came across the line in third. I was like, Jesus Christ, like I've come across in third and I qualified fifth. This is not my day. But then Amory crashed and it was cool. So yeah, I was stoked to get fifth. I was super happy with fifth there. Probably almost happier at the time than the second on the podium. Because I was like, yeah, backed it up 2 weeks in a row. It was pretty cool. And for Finn, like I was happier for Finn than myself. Even it was a cool day.
Yeah, definitely. That was really cool to see. So that left us coming into Val d'Isère with you seventh in the overall and 623 points, the same as Greg in eighth. And then there were five of you really fighting for fifth: Kolb, Danny, Minar, and Coulange. How did you approach Val d'Isère?
I thought going into it, maybe I was going to worry about the overall, and because Red Bull came around and got interviews with everyone that could get third. Like if I'd killed it and Loris had done bad and others, I could have got third in the overall that day.
Right, okay.
They interviewed everyone, I think five or six of us, that could have got third in the overall. So yeah, it was kind of cool, the Red Bull stuff. And I like all the added pressure. And like, you know, if Red Bull are filming you, it's for a reason. Or like if they come by or they're filming you warm up, you're like, oh, I must be looking good on track or something. So don't know. I just went into the week like, I'm going to do good at Valsar. I was like, this is my last. I did shit at World Champs. I was gutted with that. Like, had two big crashes there. And I was like, right, Valdosol's the one. And I was like, I'm getting a crystal trophy, because they used to be like these cool crystal trophies. And I don't know, I fully believed I could, I guess. I was like, I'm going to have to get lucky to get top three. But fifth, I've got this. I've got to beat Coulange. And I was like, I've got to beat Andy, but he was going too good. Yeah, I think I had to beat Andy and Coulange. But luckily, obviously, Laurie crashed for me. But yeah, I don't know. I just went in like I was going to do good at the race. I knew I was fit and strong and I was just going to go hard.
Okay. So yeah, so to follow that up at the summary, you seeded 20th and then fifth in the race. Laurie, as you've just said, big crash, dropped him to sixth in the overall. Corbett, his incredible result with his second place, pushed him to fourth, and you got your fifth in the overall. So tell us a bit about what that means after the years of graft you've put in.
Yeah, it was kind of funny. Yeah, like you said, I qualified 20th because I had an over the bars in my run. I just had the smallest crash. Smallest slowdown to a big crash. Like I had a full over the handlebars, got back up, rolled down the next straight, straightened my seat, then cruised down the rest of the track and qualified 20th. And I was like, Jesus, like I must be going pretty quick. So you've got to stay in the headspace of that. And Emily's got a real cool video of me just before I got my run. It's real funny watching it back because someone else said this to me. You never know what's going to happen. Like you're just there in the morning and like in the evening, you're like, whoa, I didn't know all this was going to happen today.
Yeah.
And look at that video she's got just as I'm pedaling up for my run. She's like, boy's going to light it up. And I really like that video because I'm like, shit, I didn't know how I was going to do. And then you go up for this run that is in the future, now in the past. It's like, sound a bit weird saying all this, but it's such like a cool thing to look back on, like that video before it. I'm like, oh, I didn't know what was going to happen. And then, yeah, the overall, honestly, getting fifth in the overall for me was the highlight of the year. It was better than the second. Honestly, better than the second place, getting fifth in the overall is like, I like sometimes think about that now. I'm like, oh, the year was good. I got fifth in the overall. And like the trophy's just over there somewhere, just chilling on the windowsill. So
that second place on its own wouldn't have stood for anything in the overall. The fifth in the overall proves that you were there all season banging the results in.
Yeah.
So
yeah, for me, the fifth was like honestly so hyped when I realized, because you don't know, you're trying to do maths and points and then it comes up on the screen. And yeah, the fifth in the series is probably the best bit, which is, it does make it worth it because I did a lot of training this year. Nice. So, and like trusting the new sponsors we had, like we weren't on Conti tires before, and a few people were like, are you sure you want to go there? Because their old tires 3 years ago weren't what they are now.
Yeah.
And it was like a big trust in them and the Athertons and all the like development they've put into it. So it was really cool kind of trusting that in the process and seeing it all come together, I think, with them and the team and everything.
I think it's really cool. I'm really glad that you got it, because when you look at the other riders you were up against, like Minar, you know, he's won it. Danny's been world champion. It's not going to be down as their defining moment, if you know what I mean. But yeah, to you, it's really cool after all those years of racing, seeing somebody get it. I have to ask, did you negotiate a decent bonus with the team manager?
Team manager, hey? Jeez, not really. I tell you what, I can probably say this, I'm not getting mad. I asked for, before Snowshoe, I were like, oh, deal with Pivot was up at the end of the year. So I actually asked for my, like the new deal before I got second at Snowshoe with Pivot, like the pay rise or whatever we were getting. And I didn't put it up after that. But after I got the Snowshoe second, the owner of Pivot put my win bonus up. I can't remember if it was $5,000 or whatever. He said, if you win, I'll give you whatever X more. Didn't have to, it wasn't the contract. But he said, if you win a World Cup this year, he's like, no, when you win or when they win a World Cup this year, I'm going to make your bonus bigger. And he just did that. He like sent me a text and then like sent an email and he's like, your bonus is this much bigger if you win one. Just because he's a cool guy. He's really cool. And just like, I guess, to try and maybe fire me up that little bit more or whatever. But he was hyped. And yeah, so the team manager didn't give me one. But yeah, Pivot actually offered me a bigger bonus if I won after that, which was pretty cool.
That's very cool. There's so much more to chat about. We'll have more from Bernica after these messages.
Megan, it's Sasha at Revolution Bike Park. It's that time again. We're going to go and have a chat to a few people about what they think is the best thing about Revolution Bike Park.
Very dusty today, so that's a good thing. But probably the variation of tracks from for beginners or intermediate, I should say, to advanced, you know.
Free rides, ghetto,
far side, new far side, wouldn't it?
Yeah. pretty much them all.
Just a varied trail, to be honest.
Yeah.
It's a bit for everybody, isn't there? From all guys like us to absolute pros.
Single Track is the world's finest independent mountain bike magazine, and they have a fantastic offer for podcast listeners right now. If you enter the code MAKINGUP at checkout, you'll get 50% off print plus and digital subscriptions for the first year. Print plus includes 6 issues of the magazine, each one containing plenty of ride inspiration, opinion, adventure and reviews, plus full digital access to their site for under £20. With the discount code, digital access to their site starts at just £10 a year. That code, once again, is MAKINGUP. That's MAKINGUP, all one word, no spaces, for 50% off print plus and digital subscriptions at Single Track.
If you're enjoying the Making Up the Numbers podcast, hit subscribe now so you don't miss an episode. And drop us a review whenever it's convenient. For additional content, follow us on Instagram at Making Up the Numbers Racing.
I think it was either Loic or Amory who said on the pod at the start of the season that it's so hard for someone like you to compete when you've got the vlog, the team to run, and all they've got to think about is racing and getting ready for racing. When you look back now, is it a distraction? Do you ever think about kind of what you might have achieved if you were just racing?
Yes and no. I could give you a quick example when we get into it deeper. The vlog thing, people talk about that and I use it a lot. I'll watch it back and I never would watch GoPro back before. Never. I would never use it. I wouldn't watch anything back or anything, any like POV. And before Val d'Isol finals, it was like raining real heavy at the top when I went up in the gondola. And the turn lorry crashed on, I watched back because that got slick in the morning when it rained. Was it that day or the day before? That was one of the slick spots. It was there and a line further up that I almost crashed on. And so before my run, when I'm warming up on the bike, I watched my GoPro twice and I switched line. So I'd ridden it the day before in like quali day. I'd been going outside where lorry crashed and everyone had gone to the inside. Everyone had done this new line and cut inside and was going where this gap was. And I decided before my race run that I was going to go back to the outside. And I think that's where the vlogs this year, that definitely helped me because Laurie got a little bit stood up or slipped or something, had his shit crash that he had. So I think for once the vlogs helped me there, which is pretty cool. But maybe otherwise, honestly, like I think if I do a good job 90% of the time organizing before the season starts, like working now, that I shouldn't have too much more on in the season. I definitely have more than a normal rider, I guess. But if I do a good job from now till March, I should be pretty chilled come the season, hopefully.
Do you think it takes a bit of the pressure off?
Maybe. Yeah. And I don't know what other riders do. They must get bored.
I always think that.
I honestly don't know what they do. Like, I definitely need to do less. I'm going to try and hire an assistant soon because at the minute, it's a bit ridiculous with like all these things we're doing and adding another team and riders. And yeah. But. Yeah, like if I'm so, I think in our team, we all really care about each other's results, or I hope we do. But I get so nervous for their race runs. And I think so stoked, like I did shit at Leger, but Jenna won. So it was like the sickest day ever.
Yeah.
Whereas I think, yeah, if I didn't have the team, I'd have been like, oh, I've just done shit as myself today. But you're like, oh, today's still great because one of our riders, Jenna's become world champion.
Yeah.
So yeah, maybe you're like, you've got a fallback on the other riders. Yeah, come on, guys. You can pull through for us today. I've done a shit job, so you can do a good one for me.
So for the team. If someone asks you what you do for a job, what do you tell them?
What would I tell them I do for a job? I guess I like run a team and a professional. I'd say professional cyclist. I always say it sounds cooler than like mountain bike or something. Oh, it sounds more professional. Professional cyclist and like team manager, I guess. Team owner.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess, yeah. I'd say rider, team manager.
Yeah.
I wouldn't say I'm a YouTuber, but I guess I am now as well.
Vlogger, yeah, vlogger extraordinaire. You're known for being one of the most stylish riders. Does that come naturally or do you have to work at it? The stoppies and all those kind of things?
I worked at it for a while. Like I remember thinking Stevie Smith, I saw him at Fort William one year, one of my first years racing World Cups. He looked so sick. And Brendan, I hate to say it now because I'm friends with him. I'm trying to beat him. But I always thought his style was sick, whether he was like landing front wheel up and stuff, like Sam Hill as well, or like scrubbing off and landing nose. I always either want to land real nose heavy or real rear heavy because I think it looks sick and it feels cool. And I always believe like if you feel like you look sick, you normally ride good and then it like all works. So I don't know. No, like I think I did work at it. Yeah, I didn't just have style, I don't think. I'm not saying I do now, but yeah, I didn't just go on a bike. I was like, right, I want to look good at this jump, or I want to look good doing this thing. I think sometimes it's hurt my race results. Look good on the track. What can you do?
Okay, so moving conversation towards Red Bull Hardline. Three-time winner, 2016, 2019, and 2021. Is it your favorite event?
Yeah, I love it. It's just a sick vibe with everyone. I love riding bikes. I love hitting jumps. I love riding bikes. Like, that was all I did before, was hit jumps. And then I had to race to, like, I don't know, just hit more jumps or something. So I don't know. Yeah, I always really like jumps. So yeah, I love that event. Like, the vibe with everyone there is sick. Everyone hangs out, ride cool jumps, and it's just a good vibe, really. Yeah, I'd say probably one of my favorites. Yeah, normally.
Do you think World Cup racing should be on tracks that have features like the ones at Hardline that scare the hell out of the best riders in the world? Or do you just think after three rounds with a series like that, we'd be down to 50% of the riders and it'd be just total carnage?
No, I think we could definitely go more that way. Like, obviously some of it couldn't be that big. It would take too long to get practice done, but we do need better jump. The World Cup jumps 98% of the time suck. They're either built terribly, they're way too small, they don't work. Like, they suck. Like, considering we're the best riders in the world or whatever you want to say, or supposed to be at least. The tracks and some of the jumps we get dealt with, it's embarrassing. I don't know how we don't have a standard for it. Like, Supercross, a triple is this big. That's how big a triple is. Right. It's 65 to 75 foot. It's a standard. You have a roller, it's a 3 or a 5. It's either 3 foot high or 5 foot high. And you have the same guys or amazing crews coming to build it, not just someone from some random bike park. Not trying to make fun of them, but a lot of the jumps are terrible and we shouldn't be racing them. And you see, over the years, a lot of big crashes on them from the best riders in the world because they're just dangerous.
Yeah.
So not that we need to go to hardline size, but we should have bigger, sicker jumps, I think, for sure. I think that would be really good for the sport and personally for my fun level. You're cool.
Yeah, it's interesting to hear your kind of opinion there, because we've been talking quite a bit on the podcast about this riders union and riders being conscious of safety, and nobody's actually mentioned that take of having a standardization for certain things. And it would certainly solve a lot of problems if it was like what you've just said about Supercross, where if they were building a triple,
it was this big. If you had a double, it was, yeah, a finish line jump at a Supercross track is a set size normally within like five. They just, that is a finish line jump, is the same size. But a lot of people don't know that, you know.
Yeah. But it'd obviously be harder for them to do because we haven't got a throttle, so it depend on approach to whatever feature they were building. But you're right, it'd make more sense if there was some kind of thought gone into it rather than
just better guys building. Yeah, something. Because, exactly. Yeah, I think we have more injuries a lot at World Cups on jumps than we do at Hardline. And Hardline jumps are massive.
So back to the Hardline jumps. It sounds like this year you were kind of showing people around. You'd guinea pig the big jumps. I mean, talk us through that feeling when you're the one going out to hit that 90-footer and you end up going 96.
Don't know, in hindsight. Yeah, I don't know. I went up to look at it. We had so much weather, this, that, and they were debating building a line around it. And I was so against that. I rolled up my little pit bike, motorbike, and rolled into it 4 times with the engine off, and was like, I think I got these. And just in my head, I was like, I'm on. Called G up and the boys at the bottom. They had having a paintballing thing. And I was like, do you mind if I hit these? Like, I don't want to be like, because everyone was like, should we ride? Should we not ride? And I was like, it's kind of wet. It's kind of all right. And no one could decide which way to go, one way or the other. And I was like, guys, I can't decide. Then half an hour later, I was like, guys, I'm on. But I'm not going to go ride unless everyone's happy with me. I don't want to go get extra practice in or feel like I've snaked you guys. And everyone's like, no, man, if you want to go hit them, hit them. And then G was like, I'm in. And then Sam Gale was in and George. And I was like, just in my head, I was like, I'm rolling into these. So I like bombed down the road on the motorbike, got changed. I was like, all right, who's coming? I'm going now. And I don't know. It was sick. I just felt like I could do it. The first one hit it pretty perfect. It was dialed. Second was so hard to judge. So hard to judge. And then they were like, oh, the queen's just died. I'm literally clipping in and the marshal tells me. And he's like, whoa, wait, the queen's just... I was like, what? And then I waited like 15 seconds. I was like, right, I'm going to go now. So it was kind of like put you in a weird spot.
Yeah, but...
And then hit it, went a bit far. I must have we were running like prototype wheels. So like ones we're testing or like new different like supplenesses and layups and this and that. And I must have cracked it or something because... The Reynolds wheels are amazing. That shouldn't have blown up. All year they've been amazing and haven't. So, yeah, a new prototype wheel just went a bit too far. And yeah, I had a huge crash that unfortunately broke my finger and put a crack in my wrist.
Oh, Jesus. Yeah.
So not ideal.
Well, just a broken finger is not.
Yeah, for how big the crash was, I got away.
Like. You're pretty lucky on that one.
Yeah, really lucky.
So yeah, we all know what happened. Like, you crashed in a race and then you really, really regretted. I know you. I know how much this event meant to you, and I knew that.
Yeah, and like, I guess I felt like I missed all of Friday practice, so I didn't ride the next day after my crash. I had one practice run on Saturday and a qualifying run, one practice run Sunday, and then, yeah, crashed in the race. I haven't even watched the race back still. I can't watch it yet. I'll watch it at some point. But yeah, I haven't even watched any of it back or seen it yet. So too gutted, too sad about it. Because if Jackson had done, I'm going to quit. If he'd done like a 16, a 2:16, I'm like, you know what? He definitely beat me. But I think he beat my quality time at 1.5, 2 seconds. And I was like, I wanted to do a 16 on race day. It was my goal.
Okay.
And he did, yeah, 2:20 or 2:21. And I did a 2:22 the day before, like kind of chilling. So I was like, oh, I can, yeah. I was pretty gutted. The top three of us, crashed, which was kind of annoying because, yeah, he won fair and square. We all crashed. We weren't good enough to stay on our bikes, but I think the time would have got quite quick. So that was pretty annoying for sure.
Let's talk about another weekend that didn't really go your way, because you mentioned it before, World Champs. I mean, you seeded 7. You love this track. I think DJ is probably one of the most fun tracks. Everyone would agree about that. You ended up 13th, and you just seated in front of Loic. So I guess the spectators are going to get ready
The speed there, I felt good all week, and I was trying to slowly build speed. I wasn't trying to go too quick too early because I've done that too many times. So I was trying to build speed, felt great. And then race day, I just had two huge crashes. Crashed first run halfway down, where my favorite section of the track, and then second run, whichever way around it was, crashed near the top. So yeah, just got unlucky. Still had two big crashes on race day. And then I made one mistake in my run. Honestly, only one mistake that probably cost me a second. And the rest, I just didn't push hard enough because of where I'd crashed. So I think I was 2.2 off the podium, off third place. It was so tight. But I was gutted. Yeah, that sucked. Like, again, getting 13th there was not worth my day. I only kept me happy by Jenna winning that day. I was so gutted with 13th. And like, so, I mean, everyone would have been. The times were so tight. So tight. Like, I was hoping for rain there again. I was like, if it rains today, I'm on. Like, last year when it rained, I got 16th in the rain when a lot of people had dry, or everyone ahead of me had a dry race. So,
yeah,
I was hoping for rain. Didn't happen. Two big crashes, and then just rode too safe in my run. Just a little bit, just real dialed. I had one mistake, but other than that, the run was super dialed, just not quick enough. I was like, this sucks. So yeah, Worlds definitely didn't go my way. That was like the second worst race of the year, but Hardland was a lot worse.
Yeah, well, I guess like you said, you mentioned Jenna Hastings got world champion there. I was at the top with her, so I wasn't there when she actually got the title, but you were. So how much did that mean, like that moment?
It was pretty cool. It sucks that they raced so early. I think hopefully in future we're going to change their race day. But it was so cool, and like to see her and her mom, and Jenna's quite a tough cookie. She doesn't cry a lot, and see her cry was pretty cool. And like, everyone's got tears in their eyes, and it was so sick. It was a shame I missed the podium because I had to go for practice as well, which sucks that I didn't get to go to the podium. But it was unreal. It was like, I don't know. I just knew she could do it. I thought I could do it that day as well, if I'm honest. Before I crashed, I woke up thinking we might both do this today, genuinely. And I knew she could for sure if she had a good day, and I knew I was feeling it. So to see her actually pull it off was so rad. And so, like, I don't know, I wasn't even that surprised. I was just stoked. I genuinely believe she could. With like you up there, I was like, right, if Emily gets her in a good place there and they go up together and they get this, I genuinely thought it was chances were high.
But I mean, it's different when you know that someone can do it, but it actually pulling it off, like her first chance, it's pretty. I know for a fact. I know I could have done a lot of things, but in the end, I just didn't manage.
Yeah, for a first ever one to do it, her first, yeah, her fifth like world race or whatever it was, it's pretty ridiculous. So yeah, it was such a cool day. And then we had this burnout bike in the pits, and to see her on that, like in her element, being a little Kiwi girl she is, it was really cool to see it all go down, and a proud moment for me.
Can I just jump in there? Can you tell us a bit about the work that Emmy's done with Jenna this season?
A lot, so much. I was talking to, who was this earlier today about this? Someone earlier today. can't remember if it was Ollie Wilkins, actually, I think at the gym just before this, about like how for sure Jenna might have won this year, but like without the team and without Emily, because if she wasn't on the team, she wouldn't have had Emily. And I think it's taken me 15 years to do good, really. And Jenna's come out in year one and gone up and up and up from the first race, trying to work out how it works and like even work out how Emily's going to like talk to her. And Emily's worked out, right, this isn't going to work for Jenna, you know, like everyone works differently. And like, right, okay, if we help her with this or we do it this way, or, and then Jenna might be like, instead of being a rebellious young girl, she's like, okay, maybe I should actually listen to Emily. She's quite good at this. Yeah, it's been unbelievable seeing it. And like now we're like, we've got more support from the sponsors for next year and like pay Emily more and like help out more. Yeah. Because I think they've seen the value having someone and Emily around, like her experience. Even for me, some days she'd be like, I don't know if you should do this, maybe try that. Or having someone that's been there, done it, had the bad days, had the good days, and sees what it takes and sees when they either step in or step out the way, you know, like it takes a lot to see both sides, like, oh, they need me right now, or they need me to fuck off right now, you know. So it's been unbelievable and it's been so good that our sponsors, I guess, have seen that. And I've been able to show them and demonstrate with Jenna's results and in the videos and everything, like how I think important it's been to everyone's season. For myself, I've had to do less because Emily's been there helping, you know? So I think it's taken maybe weight off me, which maybe is why I've done good as well this year. So it's like helped me in turn, like, silently, but you know what I mean? Like it's silent. You wouldn't even realize that Emily's helped me by helping Jenna, but that's taken like a little piece out of my way.
Yeah.
So then I'm concentrating more on this, and then Jenna's doing more of this, and then her day's better, and everything.
I know the result didn't go your way at Worlds, but it must have put you in a good place when you're going up for practice and your rider's just won. You must
yeah,
be
maybe
going
that's
up.
Why I crashed. I went out swinging. I honestly, Worlds race day, I was like, I genuinely think I could do it. Genuinely, like, not a doubt in my mind that if I had a good day, I could do it. Yeah. And I was like, if it rains, I've got this. I'm not trying to be cocky. I genuinely believed I did. If it rained, I was like, I can't wait for rain today. And then it didn't come, but I was still like, yeah, I'm going to go. But yeah, I went too hard in practice probably. The fans are amazing. And like since doing the YouTube, like the fan love is, it's been insane. I didn't tell anyone at the time, but I saw on the pink bike poll for like who was going to win Worlds was Amory and then me. Like,
was it
the pink bike? So I've got a screenshot of it. I was like, fuck yeah, people believe in me right now.
Yeah.
I was the second most voted rider to win world champs. And then I think Finn was in third and then maybe Loic. And I was like, geez, people really think I'm going to do this. And it gave me confidence. I saw it like 2 days before and I checked it the night. And I was like, yeah, people think I got this. So, and then Jenna won. And I was like, yep, we're going to do this.
You know, when you went to look at it, did you like kind of like peer behind, like, you know, like, because if it hadn't been you, if you'd have been way back, would it have dinted your confidence?
Nah, because I'm always back. So, and I like being the underdog. I've always been the underdog, like the guy that runs the team. People, I'm like, love, hate. I think a lot of people don't like me. Some people do. Like, I'm definitely, yeah, not everyone's person. So, no, I don't think I had a lot of hate through the years. So, I've definitely got over that. And with the supercross thing I did, I got so much hate there. I really learned to not care in a cool way. Yeah. So I was surprised, but I was like, yeah, that's right. Like, finally, I'm one of the guys that people are like, wow, quite quick. So I was, yeah, even now when I look back, see, it puts a smile on my face. I'm like, wow, people put me second behind Amory to win world champs on the pink bike pole, which is kind of crazy.
So obviously, with me and the team, you always had females on the team since the beginning. I remember the first female you had was Michaela Ghetto, and then I jumped in and we talked about Jenna, but also Morgan on Enduro side.
Little women's racing over here.
Yeah. Like, I guess it was also like, it was a mix between you wanted to have a kind of have a balance in the team, but also Pivot wanted to have a female.
Yeah, I think,
team, right?
I think it's awesome. I think the more women that are riding, the more men that ride. I think it's just healthy for our sport. It's a great thing. It's cool having you guys around. You level us out. You tell me sometimes to shut up from like your point of view, and you women around it levels it out.
Shut up,
Pivot is an awesome company. They're over 50% of their employees are female, and not because they're trying to fill a quota or anything, just because that's who's best for the jobs or who they want or who they need. So it's just how it is. You know, it's not like they've got some, what is it? It's not sustainability form. They need to meet
criteria. Yeah.
No, they really are just a rad company, and they really believe in, like, I guess, getting more females into the sport. And don't know. It's just, yeah, they just get the people that are right for the job. And I think it's been always, I don't know why we've always had it. It's just not even like just happened. It's just been cool to have one. Like, yeah, it's cool. And I guess also from a marketing standpoint, your team is going to do better if you got a girl on. Girls, you guys are good at racing, and forever we've been able to buy, like, we'll pay women less. Like, to buy a top five woman is cheaper than to buy a top five guy, you know? And if you want podiums,
shouldn't be burning.
It shouldn't be, I know, I'm just saying.
No.
It should be, but it's been how it is. So if we want podiums, it was cheaper to get a girl to get podiums than a guy, you know? And from a marketing standpoint, and me trying to grow the team and have a great team, it's been a smart way to go, I guess.
Yeah.
A smart way, a fun way with Emily, a cool way. And I think in turn, we are helping between our team and other teams, wages of women's are going up. Like, Morgan's got such a good deal for next year. Like, Pivot, before her deal was even up, decided they were going to make her wage this much bigger, no matter how she did this year, just to try and make it fairer and meet up with the guys' wages, which is awesome that they've wanted to do that. And I think we're really helping go forward, because girls are all talking to each other now about their wages and this and that, which I think is good. I think people should talk, and I think the guys should more, to get the sport to go forward and get everyone paid fairer. I think it's a good thing. And yeah, I think in our team, we're really trying to push that and help, yeah, women's racing get somewhere.
Yeah. So like you mentioned, Pivot gives you almost complete autonomy in the team, like who you sign and whatever. So what do you look for in a rider when you try to sign it?
It's hardworking people. You've got to work hard. I think you've got to be fun. Obviously, you've got to fit our team. Like, you'll realize, like, we don't do stuff like other teams. Yeah, you've got to work hard. And if you have good work ethic, you're going to train hard, but you're also going to have fun. And you could, if someone's just winning, I mean, if you win every race, fair enough. But if someone's doing well and doing no social media, no interest. Like, that's, you're doing half the job in my mind. If you're just in social media and doing terrible, you're doing half the job. So someone that's well-rounded and, yeah, wants to like represent their sponsors and themselves to the best of their ability, because yeah, you can't do a social media post every day, maybe, like if you're not getting paid full time, but otherwise it's pretty easy. And I think way too many riders get either too comfy or too lazy and don't represent their sponsors well enough. So yeah, I look for someone that's hardworking and is willing to put the work in on social media, because I think that's very important for the brands that pay us all this money and put all this time and effort into getting us product. So I think we should do a good job promoting them and showcasing them. So yeah, someone that works hard, good on social media, and also tries to get good results.
So something we didn't talk about, and I'm looking forward to your answer here. On the Vital Pod, George mentioned on the top of the show that Jordy said that you are one of the least fussy riders with your bike setup.
Who said it's Jordy from Fox?
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a vital podcast came out a couple of weeks ago with Jordy, and he said you guys are the least fussy. You're the easiest to set up.
Too easy. Maybe that's a bad thing. I don't know.
That's what I mean.
I just like riding bikes. I just want to get on and ride. I don't want to worry.
Yeah, so that's the philosophy about bike setup. You just find a baseline and then you just go with it.
Yeah, just don't know. Set up feels good. We're on. Maybe make a couple of days. Maybe I can feel it. Maybe not. I don't know. I just love
it. I know that for a fact because I've seen it the whole year.
Yeah. I changed it at Snowshoe. I went down 2 PSI at Snowshoe. And did we put 2 clicks on or 2 off? I think. I can't remember which way it was. Maybe we did a click in the shock. And that was at Valsalva. Yeah. So we did that at Snowshoe. That's all I'd done all year to then. So first change was Snowshoe, I'm pretty sure. And then I ran that for the rest of the year. And we changed my shock at Val d'Isol. Did I change the fork at Val? Maybe I put
a new bike maybe on.
No, at Val d'Isol, I put a spacer in the fork because the track was ruined. It was such big holes. So we put a spacer in the fork. And I think I come off went harder in the shock then maybe. Don't even remember. That's all I did all year. So I did like 4 changes all year at 2 races. That was it. Yeah. So super easy. I don't know. Bike feels good. Feel confident. Let's go. Like, I probably should do more, but I like not worrying because then you're just concentrating at the task at hand.
Yeah.
But
question off the back of that, because I'm very similar to yourself. Like, if it feels good, I'll just get on and ride it, and I tend not to overthink it. And I also kind of have the philosophy that, like, as you say, you didn't change your bike until you got to Snowshoe. Well, a lot of the tracks we ride are fast and rough. So what changes do we really need to make? So in the circuit now, everybody's got these data acquisition things and people are clicking here and changing there. What's your take on it? Do you think they're almost just making a bit more trouble than
a lot of the time, like I don't have any idea how to read it. Neither do any of our mechanics right now. Yeah. So if you get telemetry and it says you're bottoming out 5 times in a run, is that good or bad? I don't know. Do you want to bottom out 3 times, 5 times, 1 time, half? I have no idea.
Yeah.
I believe personally you'd have to do so many runs on this one track, so many runs on this track to get baseline. But right, I was actually now half a second quicker through there because I bottomed out twice instead of once or whatever it is. I think it could be really good, but I need to start tomorrow until March, I think.
Yeah.
And I should probably do that. But at the same time, I do want to live my life and enjoy dirt jumping and motocross a little bit. But it would be nice to win some races. But maybe, yeah, with Loic and that, they go so hard on it. And they go so hard in Queenstown when New Zealand wasn't shut that it could be good.
Yeah.
But I've got better at being like, okay, I'm pushing the front this week. Maybe I can make this better. Because I always used to just be like, oh, I'm pushing the front because it's loose and rocky. Obviously, you're going to push the front. Yeah. And to a certain extent, you are going to push the front if it's dry and dusty and rocky. Like your suspension isn't going to suddenly make the gravel grippy.
Yeah.
But it could make you more planted through this or you're braking better, or it can help obviously loads. But I think we have it set up so good out the gate and like our bike works good. Fox is amazing suspension. It's going to be great straight away.
Fox are also going to know what other people are running. So they're not going to have you in there and go, oh, let's put you on something completely different to what.
No, they set us up the testing day and they're like, here's your new damper. Everyone starts here. How do you feel? 2 clicks. Yeah. Feels good. See you in a bit. It's basically that, you know?
Yeah.
So no, I think people can definitely start chasing rabbit down a hole.
Yeah, something we've seen with the data that Dan's used is that whenever he's put it on, it's told him to make everything softer and less progressive.
But yeah.
That's because he's chilling in practice. And then you're going to push much harder in either a timed run or as you get closer towards your end pace. And then all of a sudden you've lost that support and you're going to push through and the progression's gone. So yeah, I think you're dead right. Obviously, if it's done right, like Loic and Jack do, it's of course a tool that is going to help. Done wrong, I think it just creates more problems than it's worth.
Yeah, I think it takes years to learn it properly and know like what's achieving what, I think. So yeah, it would be cool. I think I'm almost too late in my career now. I've got a couple of years. We might try, but it's a big commitment. Money, time, everything wise. You're not losing your off season, but that becomes your off season, I think. That is now what you do until the season.
Okay.
So we'll see. But when I go to New Zealand, maybe we'll start trying it.
So back to the team. Huge characters on there, obviously. Are you conscious about that when you sign new riders?
Yeah. Like I said, they're pretty much my friends. Pivot are really cool. They let me come up with the ideas. I go to Chris and Rachel and everyone. Like, hey, guys, I think this guy's a great fit for Pivot and the team. What do you think? And they're like, yes or no. And they pretty much say yes. And I try and convince them that it's a good idea for the team and their brand. So okay. Yeah, we just want hardworking people that have good social media and good results. And that pretty much fits everyone we have on the team.
Okay. So a little question. If you were keeping the team with everybody on it now, but you were to add one person, you could add anyone, who would it be?
Anyone. Well, we are actually adding someone. So he's going to be quite sick. But anyone, we've got unlimited budget.
That's a team rumor there. Pivot getting a male rider. Oh, is this the one you knew, Emmy? That you couldn't tell me. Right, okay.
Honey knows loads. She's not telling you loads.
She's drip feeding.
You're already too much.
Way too much. Anyone. We got limitless budget.
Yeah.
Jack Moyer. I'm going to go straight in.
Nice.
I'll go Conor Fearon because he's like my best mate riding. But I think he's got a sick thing with Matty. I would feel too bad stealing him off Matty. I'd feel guilty there. So that's why I wouldn't get Connor. I'd never steal him off Matty and Ant-Man. They've got such a dull setup. They've got them. So I would go Jack Moyer and he'd be back on a downhill bike.
There you go.
He's so sick on it. And he was still racing Enduro. He'd be like Eddie, like they do both. But
yeah, okay.
Well, I just swung in with that. But I think I'll go Jack Moyer. He's the man. Yeah. I like Jack. Jack.
I like it. Okay. So Pivot, big race brand. You're the 2022 EWS number one team, world champions. How do Pivot value EWS versus World Cup? If you had to take the team to one of them next weekend, do you know which one there'd be more pressure to go to? Would it be a tough decision?
I know the owner, Chris, he loves downhill. He's sick. He is the F1 of mountain biking. He loves that. Pretty sure he'd want us to go to that. But I think sales-wise, they would send us to an Enduro.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure they see more from enduro, like on Monday. They're like, okay, they did good at an enduro this weekend. You know, they can see it versus a downhill race. So it depends what reason they were going, whether they were coming to hang out with a sick race or whether they wanted to sell more bikes on Monday.
Okay.
So I just wanted to ask you about the team. So I was kind of thinking that aside from Jenna, you're all in your 30s now, but I wanted to check that. So I Googled Eddie Masters age, and the first thing that
I think he's about the same as me, about 33, is he?
Yeah, so I Googled that, and the first thing that comes up is a site called explorecelebs.com. Shall I click it? I'm clicking it. So I clicked on it, and this is what it says. Eddie Masters is a well-regarded name in the world of racing. Eddie Masters is a licensed enduro and downhill bike racer from the beautiful country New Zealand. You might also recognize him as the brother of Wynn Masters. All good, yeah?
Yeah.
I'll continue. Mostly, the young man is admired for doing stunts and tricks wearing flip-flops while he mainly performs on his bike, Pivot Firebird. On a scale of 1 to 10, how curious are you to know the age of the handsome hunk? Eddie has turned 33 years old as of 2022. You can send your warm wishes on his birthday, i.e. August 13th.
That is too good.
Do you reckon Eddie's written that?
I mean, it does sound like
it. It must have been.
So like
you said, George, everyone on the team is pretty old. Well, I'm the oldest, I'm the auntie, but like everyone is, aside from Jenna, in the early 30s. So it's gonna be the question for you as well, to like try to change your team around because obviously you're gonna go stop racing at some point. You're gonna have to like get your team going.
We're gonna have to fill some spots. I know it's a tough one.
I know. Are you just hoping everyone's retire like I did? Like everyone's gonna retire and then you can change all your riders at once, so you don't have to like, you know.
Yeah, I think everyone's got plans, to be honest. I know most people's plans on the team, so yeah, I think at some point we're gonna have to have a bit of a rebuild the team. But yeah, that is the only thing, we've all done so well. Like, it would be quite expensive, not in a big way, to buy us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like, yeah, yeah.
I wanted to buy a top five rider right now, because believe it or not, I am. It feels good. Yeah, yeah. If you want to buy someone that's top five in the overall, you're going to need some deep pockets, and you're going to have a hard job convincing someone, because they've mostly been at the brand they've been at. Most riders are pretty loyal. Like in our sport, you don't just jump ship for a paycheck. You normally like your team, you like who you're working with, you stay pretty brand loyal. So trying to buy a top five riders hard, you kind of need to start building them up now, but then we've already got a lot of riders on the team, so we can't have eight guys on the team. So Pivot actually have a next gen team coming, which is pretty cool,
right,
with Dane Jewett and Ryan Griffiths, two Canadian kids, and a young girl, Tegan Heap, a US girl. So they're kind of building some riders up for us, and we're going to start helping them next year with the team, which is pretty cool. So that'll be awesome. Because, yeah, otherwise at some point we're all going to stop and we're going to need some replacements. Otherwise, what is the number one enduro team in the world and quite a downhill team is going to fade off pretty quick if it's got no roster.
But looking at those results, like you've become the top team and you're all early 30s, do you think that that might be the way to go? That you've rather than looking for younger riders, you're looking for riders who...
Yeah, but then trying to buy them, like I say, they're probably doing good already or good enough. It's not easy. They either want to stay brand loyal.
Yeah.
Or they're going to cost you a fortune. You know, like the money's going up, which is cool, but then you've got to convince brands, like I have to go to Fox, Shimano, Conti, like, guys, we need X amount of dollars for the year because we're going to buy these riders. Or I say buy them, obviously we're not buying them.
Yeah.
This is all we need to pay them. But yeah, it's like, yeah. So it could be the way to go, but it's not cheap and it's not easy, that's for sure.
So let me take you back to Sunday, the 5th of June, 2016. You'll remember this day. Earlier that weekend, a Bergamo factory rider by the name of Edward Masters Esquire had rather unexpectedly qualified second at the Fort William World Cup behind G. And on the Sunday, Eddie famously binned it in the first corner. Do you mention that to him?
We were talking about this year, I think, when I qualified good. And we've talked about it a couple of times, but it's a funny story looking back. Like, he's not mad about it because it's ridiculous that he qualified second, but he's on, man. Even now, I wouldn't be surprised if he came out next year and won a World Cup. It would not surprise me, honestly.
If,
so,
you, If you're his team manager in that city, if that happened again now, what would you tell him?
Well, if he qualified second, you mean?
Yeah.
You couldn't tell him anything. He's going to do what he's going to do. He's like, Eddie, go do it. Go do what you're going to do. I think he's a lot smarter now, but I don't think he crashed in the second turn now or third, whatever it was, first, yeah. But I don't know. He's something, that's for sure.
But, we need to get him on here, actually.
You definitely do. He'd be a good one.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know what you'd tell him. You couldn't tell him anything, even now. I get real nervous that I say the wrong things at Enduros, like this year when he got third at Canada. I don't want to say anything. Should I say? I want him to do his thing. So I'm so invested, in a stoked way for them. Put between me and their effort and everyone behind the effort, the amount of people at Pivot Warehouse, Reynolds Warehouse, Fox that send products out and make this happen is so cool. That when someone's doing good, I don't want to say anything because I want it to happen, because I know it normally hopefully makes a lot of people stoked.
So let's finish off with a bit of chat about the future. You've been quite vocal about ESO and image rights. Do you really think you're going to get anything?
I hope so. If these other team managers wake up, I'm going to call them out right now and bloody stand our ground. If you have strength in in unity. Yeah, strength in numbers, strength in unity. If we all agree, this is what we need to do, this is what we do. Without us, they have no show.
Yeah.
If no teams turn up, if they paid $10 a year for the races, let's say, or $8 a year for a race, and they have 8 races, every race we don't show up to, they lose $1, and it's a much bigger number than that. So they need us to show up, So if we all believe in this fair thing happening and they think they're doing this great thing, want to treat us fairly, then we can come to a great agreement. But lately we've had some quite big figures and we don't know what we're getting for it yet. So
yeah,
hopefully it could be the best thing that's ever happened to the sport. It really could be.
Yeah.
I'm not doubting that they're going to be amazing, but we don't know enough. It's so late now.
Yeah.
We need to know more. So I really, really hope they tell us more and give us a great fair deal that makes us stoked and want to perform at our best and showcase ourselves and our sport and their channel the best.
Have you still not heard anything?
Not really. No, I got an email the other day and it didn't really tell me anything. So I asked a little more questions and I'm waiting to hear. So yeah, not a lot.
Street racing. You had a massive one at the start of the year. Was it in Chile?
Yeah, Valparaiso, yeah.
Yeah, it was brutal. And to me, there's levels. There's crashing on World Cup tracks, then there's maybe crashing at Hardline. But none of the landings are basically 100% concrete and metal. What goes through your head when you're in the start of a street race?
I don't know. I was trying to ride smart there because I knew I was feeling good for the season. And it was just a sketchy triple. And I think I just didn't put my tyres hard enough. I was kind of confident. New Contis. And I was oh, these are good. But I needed more street race pressure. I think my mistake was not having my tyre hard enough and it just blew off the rim, I guess. So, yeah, I think most of the time you're pretty dialed it. You just ride at 90%. You sprint at 100%, but you don't ride the straights at 100%. You've got to be smart. Right. But I love it. I love that we get to travel to these amazing places that most World Cups, we go to the same town on the same weekend for the last 15 years. Yep. People think you travel, but you go to the same place. For street races, we go to Chile, Mexico, China, wherever it is. And it's such a cool opportunity to do. And they actually pay you good prize money, unlike the World Cup series. So that's also a bonus.
So would you like one round of the World Cup to be a street race? Do you reckon that?
Maybe not the World Cup, but I think Red Bull want to do more street races worldwide. So I'm all up for them. And especially as I get older, I'll just go and cruise and do some whips at those. And it'll be pretty fun.
Jack, Emmy, have you done a street race?
No.
No, I don't think I have.
Would you?
Yeah, no. Sure. We go to the same places all the time, and these other races take you to really cool cities that you'd probably never visit. So, yeah, it's definitely.
I'll come and kill you guys.
I'll
do the trip, but I won't do the risky thing.
Yeah, I just don't think I could do it. It looks too painful if you crash.
Yeah, it's a bit miserable. I've still got a mark on my right knuckle from the corrugated iron that burnt the skin off. So,
oof.
Not the best.
So what's the plan for next season then? You mentioned before you were getting a bit more help with the team. Is that so that you can try and focus on the racing a bit more?
Yeah, and even the off-season train more. I'm so busy at the minute. I'll have a few hours after. Yeah. I'm going to be up to midnight tonight. And then at 6:30 tomorrow, the bus is back in the UK now. So I've got to drive to that and get that emptied with someone that's now helping this week work for me. get all the e-bikes and all the spares out of that and bring them home. So I got a bit on this week, if I'm honest. So yeah, I'm going to get like an assistant to like help do more of the payments, more emails, like loads of the stuff like that. And even like insuring the vehicles or checking this. I've done half of, or maybe two thirds of the accommodation for next year already. So that's all done. Well, two thirds of it. So I've got a third to go on that. But yeah, just get all that done and then train. I'm going to go out to New Zealand as soon as possible. Yeah. Once everything's kind of sorted in the UK, hopefully like end of December, I'm going to go out to New Zealand and just ride there, train. I miss it there. I haven't been for years. So just get some serious downhill bike time out in the good weather and then try and win one of these World Cups next year, hopefully.
I was going to say, is that the aim for next season?
The aim for next year. The overall is cool. I want to win a World Cup. It's been the aim for the last 15 years pretty much. But I feel like we're in striking distance now and Pivot are working on some cool things. So yeah, I think, yeah, with them and Conti, we're only going to get more used to the tires, you know, and working on stuff with them. So
cool.
Yeah, I think, yeah, try and win a race.
Question off the back of that. Obviously, like you just said, you've had 15 years pushing for a World Cup win. If you win the first one, what's going to happen then?
Probably announce my retirement and then go hard.
Really?
I always said I would announce my retirement on the podium.
Well, that's why I've asked the question. Are you not going to, if you won the first, would you not be like, right, fuck it, I'm having the overall?
Or would you be like, I'd race the season for sure. But I'd probably announce my retirement. I've always thought it's so cool to go out on a high. And it's not about being cool in life, but it would be pretty cool to go out as the champ. It would be pretty sick, you know, but I don't know. Racing's so much more fun when you do good. I had such a good time this year. Like when you do good, it's way more fun.
100%. I've had 2 years injured. It fucking sucks. Yeah, like, it was just before COVID when I was enjoying it because I was doing well. It was good, yeah. As you say, it's way more enjoyable. So
way more so. We'll see. Where's the foot? Lenzerheide, man. I'm going to come and swing in a Lenzerheide, I tell you.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. So, maybe I'll see how we feel going into the season. Like, even now, so much like I visit the gym today already just to sustain what I had, not to go hard, just so when I start training properly at the end of December, that I haven't lost everything I built for this year.
Yeah.
So we're already like in a routine, you know, you're not like, I can't just go to Hawaii on holiday for 2 weeks. Like you, well, you can if you want to lose time and this and that. So it would be nice at some point to not care about what I do every week.
Yeah.
So we'll see.
Cool. Well, thanks for coming on the show. It's thanks for making the time. I know how busy you are. It's been just as entertaining as I knew it would be. And that's it for another episode. Thanks to the sponsors of the show: Hope Technology, JTEC Suspension, Revolution Bike Park, Ride Southern Spain, Schwalbe, and SingleTrackWorld.com. As always, if you're enjoying the podcast, please subscribe so you don't miss an episode. And if you've got a sec, please drop us a review. Alternatively, please give us a follow on Instagram at MakingUpTheNumbersRacing or Facebook.com/MakingUpTheNumbers. We'll be back very soon.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.